Hello and welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selina Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
This is Selina speaking, and this week I invited the very special Tiu Dahan to join us on today's podcast. Tiu has made her life all about ritual. She is, amongst other things, a celebrant, so she helps people create rituals for weddings and funerals and naming ceremonies. But she's also really into teaching people about the importance of ritual in our day-to-day lives, what it can do for us as human beings, what it can do for us as modern women, and how we bring it into our lives. So I got together with Tiu and had a fascinating conversation about ritual, about how we can bring ritual into our lives, and what a difference it can make to us when we do. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. I completely fell in love with Tiu, and I think you might do too. As ever, let us know what you think about the podcast. Let's keep this conversation going. Hi to you and welcome.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Such a pleasure.
I'm so excited about the conversation we're about to have. So to you, let's start with you telling us about what you do in your role as a celebrant.
Okay, so as a celebrant, I create rituals and ceremonies for people who want to honour the transitions in their lives in ways that are not traditional perhaps or religious. So that means I marry people and I bury people. I also do baby namings, but I also do a whole host of other kinds of ceremonies that people want to honour the transitions in their lives. So that means I work with couples who want to create a different kind of wedding ceremony. I work with families who want to have a funeral that honours the spirit of the person who's died in a very particular, personalised way. And those are the big, obvious weddings and funerals are the kind of the obvious ones.
Yeah.
But also create all sorts of other ceremonies for whatever people may want. So, so there are lots of different thresholds in our lives that traditionally would have been honoured in some kind of a way. Birthdays and Christmases and, you know, Easter and whatever, anniversaries are kind of still part of the cultural menu. But you can also create other kinds of rituals if you want to for transitions, like a breakup or starting a new project or moving into a new home or the anniversary of a death or the recovery from an illness. You know, who knows? Yeah. There's many different things that happen in life where we just could benefit from having a little moment to honour the transition from one state to another with some kind of creative expression that involves your imagination and your sense of presence, and that's what I help people do.
Absolutely amazing. Well, that is what I really want us to be talking about today. I want to hear about some of the, you know, kind of more traditional ceremonies that you do for people, but really get into what we can each be doing in our own lives to create ritual, to end a chapter, start a new chapter, and in particular, why ritual is so important, what it does for us as human beings, because I think that I love ritual, I'm fascinated by it, and for me it's something that is really important to have these moments of ritual. Certainly in my life, I feel like it really gets me into that, really connected with that sort of sweet sacredness of life and honouring a moment in life where you're closing one door and opening another, whatever that may be. And I think I believe it's really important for us to bring ritual into our lives. But why do you feel that ritual is so important for us as human beings? What does it do for us?
So ritual is ancient human behaviour. We are ritual creatures. We have always been in the habits of creating rituals. And yet, in a primarily secular society where we are screen addicted and stressed and motivated by acquiring stuff, we forget that fundamental human aspect of who we are. Mm. It's a little bit like nature deprivation. It's like we've always lived in forests, always been connected with the land up until really quite recently. We've always had rituals up until quite recently. Mm. And it's that kind of fundamental human need to stop and reflect and honour and celebrate and notice that you're going from one moment in your life to another.
Yeah.
So I'm hugely relieved that mindfulness is as prevalent as it is now, which I think is brilliant, and I'm really glad that people are becoming more present in terms of just going, right this second, how do my feet feel? How do my knees feel? What is the air temperature? How does the, you know, all of those things that mindfulness teaches, all of those things are just about being with the present state as is.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely right, because that is, you know, the kind of the core of all of our experience. But ritual is like adding a whole level of creativity and sometimes celebration to that mindfulness. So it's where mindfulness meets active meaning.
And what you say is we are, humans are ritualistic animals. Yeah. I feel that when we talk about ritual, and when I'm doing rituals, and I've done kind of made up rituals for friends at weddings and things like that, so I love ritual as well. I think there's something profoundly fulfilling in it. And that's why I think it's so important that we find ways to bring it into our lives, also outside of the, you know, the wedding, the funeral, the baby naming.
There's this woman who I interviewed who is called Sabon Fusome, who is the keeper of the ritual of the Dagara tribe of West Africa. She's from Burkina Faso, but they're also in Ghana. And they're essentially an indigenous people who still have the same traditions that they've always had, but she spans Western modern 21st century culture as well, so she bridges those worlds, and she teaches their rituals in the West.
Wow.
Yeah, and so she said, ritual is to the soul as food and water is to the body. We need it because it nourishes a part of us that nothing else will reach.
I absolutely believe that. I think that's why I get so excited just by talking about it, because something like in my very cells is saying you need this.
Yeah. And for me, it's an art form, essentially. Well, I think of it as being an expression of creativity that has no obvious tangible form. So, you can't put it in a painting, or you can't video it and capture it even. You can attempt to write about it. Mm. You can attempt to capture it in music. You can attempt to, you know, all of these things point to it, but it exists in a different medium. It exists in time and space itself. Theatre is the closest to it, I suppose, in that it's an experience where people are witnessing something which can't ever fully be captured. Mm. But what it does is, in that moment, there's a shared collective imaginative engagement. Mm. Everybody's in the same narrative for a moment, whether that's two people going from being single individuals who are in love with each other, boyfriend and girlfriend, or girlfriend and girlfriend, or boyfriend and boyfriend, however the configuration is, to suddenly becoming a joined force and a unit that then is bound up by vows and by the intentions of their future and by the loving gaze and support of all of their friends and family who are there to help. And something else, like something other, which I'm kind of not naming because I don't have a name for it, but I'm there to honour it. I'm there to sort of hold my arms around this couple saying their vows, not literally, I don't hug them as they're saying their vows.
unless they ask for it.
In which case, I'm very huggy and very happy to hug people who are madly in love with each other, but that would be a little bit weird. But
you don't insist on it.
I don't insist on it. A little bit of touching, no. but my role, I feel, in a wedding, for example, but in all these ceremonies, is where I basically kind of put my invisible arms around the occasion.
Yeah, you create and hold the space.
I do. Yeah. And in that space, something out of our normal life can happen.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, I think it's in those moments that I really become present to the journey of life and really feel connected and it's the sacredness of life, I think. And I know what I mean when I say that, but it's that sort of that sort of beauty of life, and take a moment just to really honour it.
Yeah.
And and share that moment with other people,
that's
whether
right.
it's an expression of love or it's, you know, saying goodbye to someone that we've just, a loved one that we've just lost, and,
yeah.
and celebrating their life, but also experiencing grief together.
Yes.
And it's something that's, those emotions, they're so universally human, and we're experiencing them together and honouring it. Honour for me is the key to ritual.
It's absolutely right. And I think I may be right in saying that the word celebrate comes from a Latin root, which is to come together to honour. And but that is based upon an etymological dictionary on the internet, and it may not be completely accurate. So I'm just going to put that caveat in.
Let's go with it, because I like that.
Because to come together to honour
yeah.
is all of those different... You can honour both the light emotions, like the love and the joy and the delight of a new beginning, but you can also come together to honour grief and sadness and any number of other kinds of emotions along that spectrum. Not all rituals are collective. You can also have ones that are completely solitary.
Yes. So actually, let's have some examples.
Okay.
So first of all, what would be one of your perhaps most memorable or most enjoyable ceremonies that you have
helped
to create?
There's so many. That's the thing. Because each one is, even the funerals, which sounds ghoulish, is actually an extraordinarily enjoyable process. But Okay, I did a funeral the other week. I know this is going to sound weird, but that I really enjoyed it, but I really did.
Yeah.
So the guy who died died of old age, and he had three sons, and he had his one, the only conversation they'd had about his funeral was that he wanted to be buried under an apple tree so that they could grow apples and then turn, make cider into and make scrumpar.
Oh my God, what a legend.
So they followed this instruction, and they found this beautiful natural burial ground which had an orchard.
Mm.
And he was a Beatles fan, so they made this coffin, which was bright yellow, with a sort of collage image of the Beatles circus Sergeant Pepper on the outside, but instead of the faces of the Beatles, it had the guy inside the coffin and his three sons. And so this whole funeral had this brightly coloured, joyful, and also really sad emotion woven into it. And so when I knew that it was sort of Sergeant Pepper themed, I said, I do happen to have a pea green military 1960s kind of marching band coat. Should I wear that? And they're like, yes, please. So I basically dressed as a toy soldier and led this thing. And it was so beautiful because the sons had created this thing in the absolute likeness of their father, in all of his joy, in all of his humour, in his real open-hearted love for them and for his grandchild and for the community around him. And it was just the most extraordinary. I mean, it was really powerful. It wasn't like it was all jolly. They named the shadow too, because they'd been difficult things.
Mm.
But they didn't shy away from that. And they each, and he'd written lots of poems, this guy who had died. So it was perfect. We could just use his poetry to kind of indicate his beliefs and to share his story in the orchard, putting the apple. And a mate of theirs played Old Man by Neil Young on a guitar, and everyone sang along to the chorus. It was just beautiful. And then we all did this process with the apple tree that was going to be planted, where everybody present shared a wish and an intention and a goodbye for the guy, and wrote it on a little luggage tag and then tied it to the tree. So that when the tree was planted, it was fully, fully imbued with all of the love and the blessings of all of his community. And it was done with such integrity and joy, and also real permission for tears. There were lots and lots of tears.
Yeah.
So that's an example. And it sounds weird, but it was just the most magical, amazing funeral.
I love that example because I think it shows the creativity that you can put into it. But also, it's such a celebration of life. And that's why I think, for me, ritual is so important, because it is about remembering that this life that we are on, because I think that's what we forget. Mm. I think that's what I need reminding of with ritual. It's just like you kind of almost forget what you are and what you are part of.
That's
and I think in ritual you get a real essence and a sense of that.
Yes.
Just in the experience itself.
That's right. And it's about turning a moment into an art form. That's the way that I also choose to see it. It's like you're, I mean, like I said before, it is this kind of experiential art form which doesn't really have any obvious parameters around it in terms of you can't package it or capture it, but it does have a beginning and a middle and an end.
Yes.
And it does have rules around it, like phones off. You know, and when you're present, be present. You know, it's not a powerful ritual requires everybody to be really, really attentive.
Yeah,
to,
there's
to
no
the
whispering
content.
At the back and
ideally not.
Papers.
You
and...
know, exactly. It doesn't really go with the territory. Mm. It's a little hard to do sometimes because obviously we are in a screen addicted world, and most people do capture their experience through screens.
Mm.
But I always consult with the people who I'm working with and say, how do you feel about that? Ideally, for me, there's no screens at all.
Yeah.
Unless there's an official photographer, in which case, fine. But other than that, it's better to have everybody actually really in the moment, because that's what, exactly as you say, it's about appreciating the life that we're experiencing as it's happening. Because,
yeah.
I mean, it's a cliche, but it does fly by very fast.
Yeah.
And ritual is a way of kind of... ring fencing a magical moment and going, this is the half an hour where I'm going to reflect on X, Y, and Z, where I'm going to feel whatever it is that I need to feel, where I'm going to honour that this is no longer where I was before and it's not yet where I'm going to be, but I'm in this moment of transition from one to the other.
Yeah.
And to make all of that conscious and celebratory, it makes... I mean, I don't know if that... idea that when you're on your deathbed your life flashes past you in a stream of images, maybe it does, who knows, but if it does, why not add to that stream of images with some really conscious, beautiful, magical moments, you know,
it's
ones that you've deliberately co-created to be as beautiful and as colourful and as meaningful as they can be.
Another ritual that I know you have done,
yes,
is you have actually married a woman to herself.
I have, indeed.
So how did that come about, and what was that like for you?
So that was my very dear friend Grace.
Mm-hmm.
She asked me to be her celebrant. She decided to marry herself. She proposed to herself. She's also very clear. We've had a conversation recently about the fact that she... feels more comfortable speaking about her motivations herself rather than me speaking for her. So I will be interviewing her.
So do
quite right.
Don't worry.
But I can talk about my experience.
Exactly.
Of it.
Yeah.
So my experience of it was my first official gig actually as a celebrant. I mean, I've been involved in weddings before, and I've been a wedding singer actually for years, and I've been involved in my mother's wedding to my stepdad and various other things, but in terms of me holding the space at the in terms of actual ceremonies, it was my first.
Right.
I didn't know it was going to become a global news story not that long afterwards, but at the time but I have done a lot of creation of experiences, so it was terrain that I was familiar with. So Grace is a very good friend, and when she said she was getting married to herself, because I know her so well, I was like, but of course you are. this didn't particularly surprise me. I hadn't anticipated it, but it wasn't completely out of character for her. And so it then became a case of my role initially with her was to help her. She'd actually very rarely been to any weddings at all. She'd been a bridesmaid as a kid.
Yeah.
And she'd been to, I think, one friend's wedding as a photographer.
Wow.
But she hadn't actually... she didn't really know how they worked. Mm. So part of our thing was me going, well, usually what happens is... and then filling in the blanks.
Yeah.
So just letting her know what the traditions are in terms of if there were any there that she wanted to draw upon.
Mm.
And then... on top of that, it was also about then designing the experience, the content of the ceremony, so that it covered everything that she wanted it to cover, which is also what I do with couples.
Yeah.
So in her case, for example, the fact that she had a ring was a really big deal. She wanted to have a moment where she put the wedding ring on. And so part of my job was to hold that ring beforehand. And it went with her vows.
Yeah.
So it was actually the culmin. It wasn't the absolute end of the ceremony, but it was the crescendo, if you like. So quite a lot had happened before it. But the ring moment was this piece where she was saying these words that that we had, I had also helped her to write. I mean, she came up with them herself, but we had a little kind of, me and another friend helped kind of coach her on the content to see what words would be really, really true for her and ones that she definitely wanted to adhere to for the rest of her life.
Amazing. Yeah. Love that.
And then sealing that with a ring. And again, it was my job, as I said before, to kind of hold this space of this honouring of her experience, and also to create, for me, the thing that I found super inspiring about it was that there she was making a declaration of commitment to being all she could be and being self-loving. And one of my parts of it was a suggestion to her, which she said yes to, which was before it all began, before she entered the space, actually, the congregation, if you like, which ended up being 50 of her friends and family, all sat in concentric circles in this room. And I led a little kind of very short guided sort of visualization where I said, let's take Grace's inspiration of self-love and take a little piece of that ourselves. So I led this little visualization where I said,
oh, that's great.
It was really juicy because we could all do, I mean, as you would know, we could do with a little bit more of this in our lives. And my argument was, we often have this inner dialogue going, all of us do, which often is not as kind as it could be, you know?
No, we call it the shitty committee.
Yes, we do! I've never heard them called that. Exactly, so when you've got that constant noise in your head going, this isn't right, or that, or fear, or doubt, or anger, or jealousy, or whatever, all of those horrible things, to put a little bit of love into that dialogue and just have a voice that adds into it, you are loved. You are lovable, you are enough, or whatever those words are that might be meaningful. And to take Grace's action as an example of really honouring that voice. And basically, I led this little meditation. I was like, take some of that love and imagine it trickling like golden honey-coloured light into the nooks and crannies that of ourselves that aren't quite loved enough.
Yeah.
Because there's always room for a little bit more.
We're a little bit ashamed of, that we pretend that aren't there, that we neglect.
There's those shadowy, cobwebby, grey nooks inside. And just to take a little bit of that honey-coloured golden light of love and pour it into those things as a result of Grace's action.
Yeah.
So that, for me, was, that was my inspiration with it as well. I felt like, wow, that's such a beautiful thing to do, can't we? And to allow people to witness you in that too.
Oh yeah,
amazing. Because I do know some other people who've married themselves, but there's always been solitary, interestingly. So I know people, because after this, obviously it raised this whole conversation. Yeah. And funnily enough, several different people I know went, oh, my mate married herself. I know a guy who married himself.
Really?
Yeah. Which,
oh, I love that.
I know. He showed me his wedding ring. Oh, amazing. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty unusual.
That is unusual. I'm even thinking, really? Like, no, come on, expand yourself, Selena. Yes, but I've got a friend, and she married herself, and she went under a tree, I think, a solitary.
Yeah.
And she bought herself a ring, and she gave herself the ring and said a few words.
Yeah.
But to do it in front of people, to allow, to have the courage and the vulnerability to do that, because there is going to be backlash about, oh, you know, it's narcissistic, it's, you know, to be doing something like that. But I think it's incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, there was a backlash, but not from her friends and family.
Oh, no.
Her friends
and
family were, I mean, there was hilarity.
Yeah.
You can imagine there was kind of, only you, Grace. There was quite a lot of people finding it funny, but she gets that it's funny too. She's not.
Did she throw a bouquet?
Because
I think I saw a picture.
Absolutely, she did.
Imagine being the person that caught that. You'd be like, oh my God, yes, I'm going to marry myself next. I mean, that's like, to me, funnily enough, that's more, I mean, I think marriages are wonderful.
Mm.
And, but the idea of like catching the bouquet that says, well, you're going to marry yourself.
Yes.
I find that more exciting than the bouquet. It's like, oh, looking awkwardly. Either you're single or looking awkwardly at your boyfriend. He's like, oh God,
no pressure,
exactly. Oh, so wonderful. I love that. I'll definitely interview her.
Yeah. So it did. So one of the things about it was that, you know, it was intended for the eyes and ears of her friends and family. And then I accidentally, inadvertently made it all go mental. Not intentionally at all.
Made it go viral.
Didn't mean to. I gave a talk at a festival and there was a journalist at this festival. I was talking about being a celebrant in general.
Right.
Gave examples of weddings and funerals and I trained as an undertaker as well for a few weeks, which was amazing. And I spoke about Grace's self-marriage, and there was this journalist in the audience who said, could I speak to her about this? And I said, I don't know, maybe, you know, I can ask her if it's all right. And then he did, and then it led to an article that then went completely mental.
That really captured people's imaginations.
Yeah, and it relates to self-love.
Yeah,
which is,
completely.
Yeah.
So now let's talk about the rituals that we can do for ourselves when we are closing one chapter in our life, perhaps letting go.
Yeah.
And opening up a new chapter, inviting something in, whether that's a relationship, whether that's a new creative project or business, or opening a chapter to make a dream of ours come true.
Yeah.
But also that element of, and I guess often they go hand in hand, letting go of one thing, but also sometimes letting go of lost loves or unfulfilled dreams that we finally go, you know what, I need to just let go of this and just step into a new space where I'm not clinging on to the hopes of that happening, perhaps.
Yes. Rituals are about generating a space in which you can feel an emotion, where you can reflect, and where you can honour a transition.
Mm.
And also where you can do that intentionally with other people or not. And so that idea of creating a container for presence and for emotion and transition and reflection is something which I think is just worth doing.
So how, either give us an example of something that you've done to either close a chapter, or open a chapter, or do both.
Okay. So the example that springs to mind is I had a project that came to an end, a big project that was lottery funded, that was this huge, I mean, it was the work of my life, you know, and when it came to an end, I actually had a long drawn out series of rituals for the ending.
Mm.
But the very last one was where me and my creative partner and one other person all made little paper boats, and we drew in wax crayons the name of the project and pictures of ourselves on the boats. And then we went down to a river and we stuck little sparklers in the top of the boats and we launched them. And we just kind of said, go wherever you need to go. Wherever this thing is, we don't know where this is naturally going to head.
Yeah.
And yet we trust that it's going to go in the right direction, and thank you for the playtime, you know.
Oh, I love that.
And really helpful, and photographed us holding the boat, so we had this moment that for me was actually really, there were many, like I say, there were stages of it, but that was the last piece. That was when we packed down the office and put everything into storage and shredded all the documents and signed off on the final reporting and like cleared like all of the accounts. It was done. It was all done, and there'd been team meetings to complete and supervision around it. Like, there was lots and lots of stages of it, but the ritual part is the bit that I remember.
Yeah, and actually usually when people come to an end of something like that, there's a sort of sadness and an emptiness, and instead you honoured it.
Yes.
And let it go in a way that really made it mean something.
That's right.
In a really positive way. Now, you've also told me in the past about you writing a letter.
Yes.
To invite
indeed,
something.
Indeed, yes. So that was an interesting one. So I'm single.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about your course, actually. Because I'm at the point where I'm calling in. I do feel ready in a way that I haven't done before for my man.
Yeah, great. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so there was one day when I had this natural, weird inclination out of nowhere to write a love letter to the person who is coming.
Love it.
So I got up. I basically lit candles, turned my phone off, got a sheaf of quite posh paper, a nice pen, and just wrote a letter by hand and with all of my unguarded hope and joy and love, as if it was going to be read by the person. Also aware within the content that it might end up inadvertently in the hands of an octogenarian lesbian who would, you know, like, not be my obvious man. But I didn't care, because it was something about putting the energy out there.
Yeah.
So I wrote this letter. I then put it in an envelope, and I wrote on the envelope something along the lines of, you know, this is a love letter to a stranger. If you're a stranger, then it's for you, or something like that.
Yeah.
So I then put the envelope in my bag, and I was going to go for a walk. And I was just going to keep my eyes open to see if I could, you know, find the spot that said, yes, this is where the letter's supposed to go, which might have been a book in a local bookshop, or, you know, tucked under a bench in the park, or hidden in my favourite coffee shop, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I went to the shop before going for this walk, and I looked in my bag for my wallet to pay, and the letter had gone. With no explanation at all. I really don't know what happened to it.
Weird.
It was so weird, though. I mean, I just, like, no, there was nothing else that was gone from my bag. Nobody had picked it. It was just gone. And took everything out. Look, it hadn't fallen down the
line.
I know. Magicked away. And then I had this...
put her hand in and taken it.
Exactly.
Stored it.
And then I had this horrible thought where I thought, I bet it's fallen out on my landlord's doormat, who's now going to be opening this incredibly heartfelt love letter from me, saying...
The dangers of ritual. The unseen, unforeseen dangers of ritual.
And I had this horrible moment, I thought, what am I going to do? So I had to send him a really awkward text. I don't suppose by any chance you've just found this enormous love letter from me that you might have thought was for you. And he said, no, I haven't. I'm sure it's out there doing its thing. Like, and I still don't know what happened to it.
Amazing.
So,
but what did that do for you?
So for me, it clarified my sense of hope and faith and excitement. It made me believe that there is somebody who's going to read this thing. And who's coming? It made me honour my longing for that without being ashamed of it. It made it a positive and magical and kind of slightly scary without being that scary, because it didn't really cost me anything.
Yeah.
Example of going with my love and putting it into the world and putting it out there somehow.
Yeah.
I didn't put very much information about myself. So I didn't really go, and by the way, if this is, you know, do contact me. I put my name, which is so unusual. I put my first name only, which is such an unusual name that if they really can be bothered and they want to Google me, they'll find me, and nobody ever has. So I don't know where it ended up. I did once see in the local newsagents a glittery note saying, does anybody altruistic want to help me with a needle in a haystack mission? And I took a photograph of it, but I've never called it. But I wonder if they found the letter and they looked. I don't know. I've kept the number just in case.
Who knows what impact it could have had on someone else finding it.
That's true. Exactly. Good. So I am in the habit of leaving love letters for strangers. I do that anyway, but not like that. Normally my love letters for strangers are more a kind of little pick-me-up note that you would find unexpectedly. So that's one of the things that I do anyway, generally.
Oh, I love it.
Which is a really lovely ritual to kind of generate the energy that you want to attract, is basically anything that activates that sense of love and abundance. And and for me, the kind of slightly sneaky, treasure-hunty kind of...
The playful, yes.
The sort of anything that makes me want to kind of snigger, you know, in a kind of muttly, kind of dastardly kind of way, just going, I'm doing something sneaky to increase the magic in the world.
And it starts the sense of it being, I suppose, in a way, it being a game. And something that you are engaged in.
That's right.
And actually, Get Ready for Love, the course that you're talking about, that we offer online, we actually start it. And we do start it and end it a bit like a ritual. So
do you?
Right at the beginning, we have, you're setting a commitment, and you read out or say to yourself an intention that really starts the journey and what you're committing to and what you're wanting to bring about. And at the end, and I won't ruin it for those of you who are in it, we have something that helps to kind of seal it in this sort of space of love and really does bring it to quite a sort of nice, sacred, how I would call it, sacred ending.
Yeah.
So actually, and because it is a journey, we take people on a journey. Yeah. And so that also has a beginning and an end.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So interestingly, a lot of people get confused about the use of the word ritual. They think your morning coffee and your brushing your teeth is a ritual.
Right.
It's not. It's a habit.
Yeah.
It's only a ritual if you imbue it with meaning.
If you light a candle before you start brushing your teeth.
If you're saying your affirmations while you're brushing your teeth, for example, right?
And end it with a bow.
And end it with a bow. Whatever it is.
Which you could do. Weave ritual into the everyday.
Why not? But what it's not is what some brands would have you believe, which is it's just about using their shower gel. You know what I mean? And there is a commodification of ritual, which is a slightly different conversation.
There's a whole topic in that, yeah.
Yes, which is fascinating to me. But there is something around people do imbue objects and identities with meaning, right?
Yeah.
So, but just back to the daily rituals thing, my morning ritual is that I have an altar, which I've always had for years, but I change what's on it. So I've got various different kinds of images that I like that connect me with a sense of some aspect that I want to connect with. So that might be creativity, that might be joy, that might be tenderness, that might be kind of nurturing, something that is represented by an object. And I've got a whole magic box of loads of different objects. So I change what's on the altar according to what I feel I need. And then I have various different candles which represent different things. So I have one for my ancestors.
Yeah.
I have one for love, whatever that means. I have one that smells really nice, which is about calling in magical, unexpected surprises, which, frankly, I have a lot of. So
I
that one's
bet
really...
you do. That doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah.
So whatever it is that you need, because you can't control that stuff.
Yeah.
But you can definitely go... Please send me.
You can invite it in.
You can invite it in. So I light these candles. One candle is for the work that I'm here to do, because I need to often be reminded. Because sometimes I get off track. You know, sometimes I go, hang on, how am I going to pay the rent? You know, am I being practical? Am I holding on to something that's so sort of nebulous and abstracted that actually it's not going to turn into a mortgage payment? You know.
Yeah.
But sometimes I need to hold the faith, and actually, what it is that the faith in. Not a religion or not a particular outcome even, but the faith that I am here doing something that is needed, and I'm doing it with all my heart and intelligence and passion, and I need to be sometimes just call back on course for that.
And you know what? I feel like that's also honouring yourself that you have stepped into that role. That's that's really inspired me, actually. That's something that I could definitely be doing more of.
Yeah, it's useful because we are perhaps tasked with these quite unusual things that are needed in the world, and yet there isn't necessarily a precedent for it. I mean, the structures might be there in some form or other, but actually we're forging something new.
Yeah.
And if you haven't got...
And it's not always easy.
No. And also if you're freelance, you know, and you don't have the structure of a working day prescribed by an office routine, and I'm single, so I don't have a partner and a family to kind of... I don't have my structure, actually.
Yeah.
You know, so my structure... Rituals help
me.
Nor do
I, and I have got a partner and a family.
Right.
They do have a little bit more now as a result of that, yeah.
But it's interesting, but rituals are one way of allowing yourself to have a conscious structure around your time, your work, your day, your emotions, your place, whatever it is. So I light these candles, and then I make a blisteringly strong coffee, which isn't... You know, technically it's a habit, but for me, nothing else happens unless that coffee is happening.
Right.
And then I get into bed and I write morning pages, which is a practice which I've been doing for 17 years.
Wow.
Which is from the amazing book, The Artist's Way, which is about unblocking your creativity. But essentially, it's three sides of A4, stream of consciousness, pen and paper.
Yeah.
And I do that series of... I do the altar and the morning pages and the coffee, regardless of what else is happening in my life.
Mm.
I mean, even if I'm on the move, I'll take a little candle with me and I'll make sure there's decent coffee, and I'll always carry a good pen and a good notebook.
Yeah.
So even if I'm working somewhere that means I have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning in order to get there, it doesn't matter. I'll get up at 4:45. You know, it's like...
And if you... And if, say, there's a rare occasion where you don't do it, how does that impact on you?
I feel unclear about my day. I feel like I haven't shed whatever my night or my day before has brought to me. Like, dreams often come back into view because of morning pages, not always.
Yeah.
I feel like I haven't fully... I feel like I'm unconscious a little bit, you know?
You haven't stepped clearly and consciously into the day.
That's right.
And I think that's why I love the rituals you can do for yourself when you're transitioning from, you know, and crossing from one chapter into the next. You're stepping clearly and consciously into that next chapter with intention.
That's right.
And it's such a powerful and beautiful and magical thing that you can do for yourself.
Yes.
Also, actually, I'm just remembering, I did a spontaneous ritual once. I've done various rituals. Even when I start a new Moleskine notepad, my ritual is to find a quote that really inspires me to start the chapter that this book, that the start of this book is kind of beginning. So I recently, and I did an Instagram of it, and I put, "She believed she could, so she did." And I put, "Let's do this."
Oh,
yeah. And that has started this next chapter for however long it will take until the new book. But I also did, I remember when I was really going on a self-love journey myself a few years ago, and I was out in California hiking with a friend, and we were talking about, you know, being people in the past that had had hurt me and hadn't treated me very well with much respect. And I said, but I'm the one that's allowing that. I said, I was really like, I've had enough of that. And I stood in the dirt and I got a big stick and I drew a circle around me. And I said, this is me standing in my sacred space. Mm. And from this point onwards, I am going to honour and protect and look after this space. And only people who are willing to treat me with love and respect am I going to invite in. And those who do not wish to treat me with love and respect, that's fine, but you don't get to step into my sacred space. And it was totally spontaneous, but it really stuck with me. And that was definitely the point where I made some kind of bold and quite difficult decisions with certain people in my life at the time to be like, you're not treating me with love and respect, and I need that.
Yeah.
And it was, so I think even spontaneous rituals like that, which you just take a moment, make a declaration, but making that circle, that physical circle around me was, you know, creating that sacred space. I declared it, and then when I stepped out, from that point on, that journey would begin where I was only going to allow love and respect into my life. And of course, that had to start with me.
Of course.
Doing it to myself.
But I love the physicalization of that circle that you described, because I have a similar one in terms of it's an inner process that I find very useful, actually, which I'll gladly share. It's something which was given to me years ago and I've used a lot, but it's an imaginary process. It doesn't actually physically take place in the world. I'll tell you briefly, because it's an absolute gem. I cannot tell you how useful it is. It's called Golden Ball, and it was given to me by this amazing woman who I met years ago. And it's a method of kind of getting your energies really clear and straight before you go into any difficult conversation. Or anywhere where you even feel like there might be a difficult conversation. So what you do is you imagine a ball of golden light at the center of your chest, about the size of a grapefruit. And with each inhalation, you make it bigger. So it goes from grapefruit to melon, from melon to watermelon, from watermelon to beach ball, whatever. With each maybe 10 breaths, maybe 15, each one, it's bigger and bigger and bigger until it's bigger than you are. So it's like, it's as if you are inside.
Until you're in it.
You're in it.
Yeah.
So it's maybe, I don't know, 6 inches to a foot above your head and around your being, full of light.
Yeah.
Into it, you invite the people, the forces, the beings, the characters who you know absolutely have your back.
Oh, that's great.
It's good.
Oh, there's people in there too.
There's people in there too. So you can invite, so that's up to for you, whatever. You may know who that is. That could be anything from a loved one who's died, like a grandparent or a parent. It could be, I frequently have my pet cat in there, who is no longer with us. It could be, a representation of a particular energy. I mean, you could have prints in there. Do you know what I mean?
If you want to have famous. Anyone that makes you feel supported and
that's right. And
strong.
And if your belief system goes in this direction, you can have deities, you can have power animals, you can have qualities, you can have colours, you can bring in whatever.
Oh, but, great. But, I have a big old eagle in there.
Yeah. Bring in your eagle. So you can have, or like spirit guides, whatever it is that you believe. It could be, or it could just be, you know, you could have an American football team in there. Whatever you need.
Right,
like,
okay.
Anything that you want to have absolutely unequivocal support.
Great.
And then you seal it. So the top, you imagine that the top has almost like a hatch, like a submarine hatch.
Yeah.
And you close it and you ding a little extra ring of light around it.
Yeah.
And then basically you're surrounded by this force total support and love and champions. And you imagine that the skin of this golden ball is made of the finest possible mesh, which is constructed in such a way that anything negative simply bounces off, like an arrow off chainmail, but good comes through. So you are then receptive to all the good things that can happen in your day, and you're simply not engaging with the energy that would hook into an attack.
Wow, how brilliant.
And it can take 10 seconds if you do it quickly. So you can just go breath, 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 fill it up, seal it, done.
Ready to go. Come on, world.
Yeah. And it's a ritual which doesn't, but the reason I think of that is because yours then also like had an extra layer of power.
Yeah.
By making that an external thing.
Yeah, so spontaneous ritual.
Spontaneous ritual. Those massive moments of life and love and death make us want to stop and not just Instagram it, you know, like they make us want to kind of connect and feel and hold somebody's hand or shed a tear or say a prayer or whatever that whatever your non-religious version of prayer would be, and come present and connect.
Yeah.
And then go, that was that moment, and then move past it.
Yeah.
And I think without ritual, we're in danger of just watching the whole show speed past us and never actually pausing to notice what is happening to us and to celebrate the moments that are essentially what our lives are made up of.
Oh, well, I'm going to finish there.
Okay.
That is absolutely beautiful. We could go on. There will be more podcasts.
Okay, good.
I guarantee. All right, because we have plenty more we could talk about. But thank you so much.
Such a pleasure.
This is definitely going to be inspiring the people that are listening.
Good.
Thank you.
My pleasure, truly. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.